isn't a hobby to me. It's not a game. It's a passion of mine. And I love it, but don't get it wrong. It's still a business. I needed to collect money. I needed to make money. Otherwise, I couldn't pay my bills.
All right, cool. I am Paul Wenzel. We are Uncharted Performance. We are at the backyard of Jason Kalipa. Jason, thank you for having us.
Yeah, no problem. It's good to be here.
It's a beautiful, beautiful sunny day in California today.
That's right.
We are just south of San Jose, right? South.
Yeah, we're near San Jose.
Okay.
Yeah.
Before we get to Jason, if you don't know Jason, if you don't follow CrossFit, you'll get to know him pretty well, hopefully in the next 45, 50 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Get a better idea. But before we get too far into the interview, make sure you check out unchartedperformance.com. Sign up for our newsletter. Otherwise, you might be missing the notifications of upcoming episodes, like with Jason, some giveaways that we have with our partners and affiliates like Rogue Fitness and Wild Nation. So make sure you do that. Also, please leave us feedback, good, bad, terrible. If I suck, if Jason's awesome, please leave it in the comments on YouTube, iTunes, or Stitcher. We want to get better, and that's the only way we can do that is if you leave us some feedback. All right, that's enough of me about Jason. 8-time CrossFit Games competitor, champion 08.
Yeah.
6 top 10 finishes. You are the owner of NC Fit, like your hat eloquently states.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
The co-founder of Box to a Business.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a little bit. And designer of Imam of the Day, partnered with Beyond the Whiteboard.
Yeah, it's the same fun I do. Just like, yeah.
Yeah. I've been following it. I'm actually, I throw it into my workouts here and there.
It's just like a fun thing that we're doing. It's cool.
Yeah. You do a lot. And we'll get to how you make all that work in a little bit. But first thing, my first question is regarding your daughter, Ava.
Yeah.
Who was diagnosed with leukemia about a year ago now?
Yeah. What are we in? We're at the end of February.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little over a year ago. So, you know, she's in what's called a maintenance phase, which is, you know, I think at this point today, it's more of a maintenance phase. You know, we kind of know what to expect. We go into the hospital, you know, once a month. She gets a bunch of medicine she gets chemo every day. She gets steroids 5 days a month. She gets, you know, she takes like 18 pills every day. She has a lot of chemo, but we only go to the hospital once a month. And then every 3 months, she gets put to sleep for the next 15 months. So she's put to sleep to get a lumbar puncture. But the amount of medicine that we actually get, through IV or through the spine in the hospital is really dramatically reduced. Mm-hmm. And so, it's a much better time today than it was a year ago.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
Awesome. What has Ava taught you through this experience?
I mean, you know, through Ava's experience, we've learned a lot, mainly about family, friends. Just that close family, close friends is what life really matters. You know, when your back's up against the wall and you feel like everything's closing in on you, it's the family and friends that really have your back. And I think that's something we've really learned through this experience. You know, seeing her strength and seeing what she has going on, she doesn't quite understand the severity of what was going on, but she's done a really great job. I mean, she's been awesome. She's been poked and pricked more times than anybody else I know, but she still keeps a good attitude. And, you know, we've just been open to a whole different world through pediatric cancer, a world that I wish I never saw, but a world that most people don't see. And so now we're passionate about helping as many families as possible that we can to create memories for them. You know, one of the things is we're super blessed financially to be able to, you know, a couple months after Ava got into treatment, maybe not a couple months, maybe like 6 months into treatment, we're able to finally get to a place where her ANC, which is like basically the factor we look for in the blood work to see how susceptible she is to getting sick, was at a level that we could take her out. And so we called the Ritz-Carlton here in Half Moon Bay, boom, went and stayed there for the night, and they did a great job. And we do that again, like once every 2 weeks. And so once a month, we take her on trips. We take her all over the place in the United States. We don't go out of the country right now. But point being is what I'm trying to do is, and right, wrong, or indifferent, you know, you have all these negative memories that have been being compounded through the hospital, right? And what I'm trying to do is create positive memories that kind of force the negative memories down to this deep bank. And so when she looks back, when she's 5-6 years old, she's not going to look back and say, oh, you know, I was in the hospital, I didn't have any hair, this, that, and the other thing. What she's going to look back on is the trip to Hawaii, the trip here, the trip there, and how she was treated. And I think one of our missions, my wife and I, is because of our network of friends and family and everything we do, we've been super blessed. And so now we want to offer that same opportunity to as many families as we can.
Okay, awesome. What have you learned about yourself?
You know, it's not necessarily about myself. It's about, you know, my wife and I. I think ultimately, you know, through competition, I've put my back up against the wall so many times, mm-hmm. and it's been cool to kind of come out the other side, right? So, you know, you're going into CrossFit Games, or even I competed in jiu-jitsu competition not that long ago. Boom, it's uncomfortable, it's challenging,
yeah.
and then you break through. And that's a cool thing to reflect on when you're done. You're like, man, that was really hard, and I accomplished it. I didn't back down. But with my wife, you know, with this situation, it's a whole different ballgame, because when you marry somebody, you know, we met when we were 14. When you marry someone, you know, you have no idea how that person will react to a negative situation in their life. And you don't really want to have it happen, right?
Yeah.
And in this case, it's been cool because we both reacted to it in a similar fashion, which only connected us and made us closer versus pushing us apart.
Gotcha.
And so that's what I've learned about my relationship with my wife, which has been phenomenal.
Awesome. So it's essentially taking the best out of a really bad situation.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I really feel like, you know, someone put us in this position and we're going to do a lot of good with it. I really, really feel that way. I mean, we've been blessed in so many ways. I mean, Ava, yes, she's been diagnosed with leukemia, but fortunately it's been a treatable form. Are we going to have a lot of challenging days ahead? Have we already had many challenging days? Absolutely. I mean, mm-hmm. we've been up against the door, and it's been a very challenging times at the ICU and different types of things. It's been very hard. That being said, you know, I'm confident that the journey will be successful and that she will be cured. And there are some other children that can't say that same thing. And so, you know, we've basically been put in this position. Now we need to go help others who their families are struggling, you know, financially, physically, emotionally. You know, we were kind of ready for this situation without even realizing it, mm-hmm. through hard work and through our family and whatever, where a lot of families just can't do that. So that's what I feel like our calling is from a philanthropic perspective now.
Gotcha. There's a recent post that you had on social media was regarding understanding what you have control over and what you don't.
Yeah.
How do you develop that recognition? Because a lot of people don't, and a lot of people are consumed by what they cannot control.
Yeah, it's challenging. I mean, it's a life skill that you have to work on. And I say life skill because it starts in sport and then translates over into life. You know, I had a sports psychologist for a long time, really great guy. And one of the biggest things he said to me when we first started working together, he's like, look, take two circles, put them on a piece of paper. Take all the things that are in your control, put them over here. Take all the things that are out of your control, put them over here. And when you look at it, reflect on the things that are in your control. And if you look at like a CrossFit competition, it's, you know, what am I eating? What shoes am I wearing? My preparation, my warm-up, my whatever. Those are my control. Things that are out of my control is what is the workout? What are my competitors doing, et cetera? And you could use the same translation into business and in family. You know, in business, I'm only in control of what I'm in control of. It's out of my control what my competitor does, mm-hmm. but it's in my control to evaluate what my competitors might do and start trending there for my business. Or with family, you know, it's out of my control. My daughter has leukemia, but what's in my control is making sure she has the best care, et cetera. And once I started really kind of reflecting on what's in my control, out of my control, it's given me much more ease, much more relaxation, which has been good.
Awesome. How can people get involved? How can people help?
I mean, from a pediatric cancer perspective, it's really just understand there's a whole world out there. Find a local blood bank and donate blood. Blood's super important. Go sign up to be a get on the bone marrow registry. Mm-hmm. Those are things we don't really think about, and they save lives. You know, blood's one of those things where I don't care how much money you have or how successful you are. If you need blood and no one donated it, you're screwed. You know, and blood saved my daughter's life at least 3 times.
Okay.
So donate blood. It's free. Go sign up for bone marrow registry. And then obviously from there, you know, if you choose to donate, we partner with a group called NIGU, the Never Ever Give Up Foundation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I prefer to send people in more of a non-financial route. I think that's something you could do for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I never want people to feel obligated to donate money.
Okay. Awesome. When we opened the show, we mentioned CrossFit.
Yeah.
So we'll kind of get into that right now.
Sure.
When you first started CrossFitting, did you think you would be involved in the sport for so long and so successful in the sport?
I mean, it's tough to say. You know, I got into it in 2006, 2007 with a I don't know. You know, I just got into it and I fell in love with the style of training. I fell in love with the competitiveness. And, you know, after winning the games in 08, it just kind of was like a surreal moment.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could ever pinpoint a time where I was like, oh, I'm going to do this forever. But when I chose to open up a gym and do it as a business, I knew I was going to be in it for a long time.
Okay.
And from a competitor's perspective, every year before the CrossFit Games season started, I would just reflect real deep and be like, you know, am I having fun? And is this something I want to do? Right. And, you know, each year I'd ask myself the same question. And at some point, it got to a point where it was impacting my ability to do other things. And therefore, I had to kind of take a step back, especially with my daughter getting sick. But each and every year, it's been a phenomenal experience to compete at the CrossFit Games, mainly because you push yourself to limits that get you outside your comfort zone.
Did you think the CrossFit Games would get as big as they have?
I don't know if anybody actually thought they'd give as big as they have. I mean, aside from that was how big they got from 08 to 09
yeah.
and then going to Home Depot Center. We knew they were going to grow, but I don't know if anybody thought they would grow as the size they are now.
Okay.
And I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but who knows?
What was the, I don't want to boil it down to, if you can, maybe three or four things that are the keys to help you be so successful for such a long time?
I think just, you know, embracing and enjoying training versus competing. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people like the idea of competing because they want to be, you know, famous or make a bunch of money.
Yeah.
But in the end of the day, fame and fortune don't come quick or at all. Mm-hmm. So you got to really love to train. You got to love being in your garage, sweating it out, pushing yourself and doing it with friends or by yourself, whatever. And you need to love that. Because if you love that, then you just do that every day. Mm-hmm. That's just part of your routine. And then when you go compete, it's just a byproduct of all that training. So I think for me, it was a love for pushing myself mentally and physically. And that manifested itself through, you know, then I wanted to go compete just to go test my abilities, okay. Right? But that's why I think I've been able to stay in it for so long.
Has your training changed over time? And
yeah.
How has it changed?
I mean, in the beginning, you know, the volume was low. It was just a different sport.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, when I finished on the podium in 13 and 14, the volume was high, right? Because the amount of stuff you had to do was so high. And the time requirement to train was high. And what I found was, you know, back in 08, I had no, you know, when I won, I had just a girlfriend who was a fiance. I had no children and the business was small, mm-hmm. one location. But as I got older and as the sport matured, the sport took up more time because you need to train 4, 5, 6 hours a day. But then our business also grew from one location to 2 to 5 to 10 to 20. And so as the business grows and the time commitment grows for the games and family grows from no kids to one kid to two kids, at some point it becomes very challenging to make time for each one of those facets in your life.
Gotcha.
And that's how my training's changed, right? Is that in the beginning it was low volume. Then I had to ramp up the volume over the years because of what the demand. And now I've had to tone it back because I don't have the time.
Okay. Do you think there's any hope for a 34-year-old?
34-year-old? I think right now a lot of people are mistaken if they think they're going to go to the CrossFit Games.
Okay.
I think, you know, the different levels, that's fine.
Yeah.
But people need to be real about it. You know, people need to realize that it, just like anything in life, there's sacrifices that are associated with it. Mm-hmm. You know, if I want to go out and go start a business or sacrifice I need to make elsewhere, if I want to go win the CrossFit Games, that's fine. But you need to recognize that by putting in that much time, you're probably going to sacrifice something else. And, you know, so if you're a 25-year-old, you know, young adult and you're excited to go to the CrossFit Games, that's great. But just recognize that you training 6 hours a day is going to help you accomplish that goal, but it's going to interfere with you accomplishing other goals. If you're trying to become financially secure and work hard, but also work at the gym 6 hours a day working out, sometimes those become challenging.
Okay. You mentioned CrossFit, family, business.
Yep.
How did you mention how they evolved in terms of growing the business, in terms of the CrossFit Games requiring more demand and your family growing as well?
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance, or is there a thing such as balance, or is it more just shifting priorities depending on the situation?
Yeah, I mean, I like to use this concept that I've created. It's called AMRAP mentality. And essentially, there's a few steps to it. So the first step is you establish, you know, what is your focus, right? Mm-hmm. So I like to equate it to riding a bike. So if you ride a bike, you got to be focused. If you're not focused, you're going to fall over, right? So first you identify your focus. What am I going to focus on? Right now, I'm focusing on this with you, right? We're having a good conversation. We're hanging out. This is what I'm focused on right now. You don't see me on my phone. You don't see me talking to somebody else. I'm with you and only you. So you establish your focus, then you work hard at it. And just like on a bike, you got to ride the, you gotta pump the pedals, right? Mm-hmm. So you establish your focus, you're pumping your pedals, right? And then every now and then, right? So we're working hard here, and then we need to switch gears. So after we're done talking for the next 30, 40 minutes, boom, I'm gonna switch gears, go do something else. And when I switch gears, I'm still focused, still working hard, but I've switched gears. And you keep doing this throughout your day, okay, right? So that is where I think, that's how I think you get balance, is that when my children get home in a little bit, boom, I'll switch that. When I go to work, boom, I'll switch that. And then every now and then, you need to look at the overall ecosystem and then reevaluate what those priorities are, what those focuses are. So an example is, you know, here I am, I'm competing, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I chose to go team instead of individual because I had to reprioritize what was important in my focuses. I couldn't dedicate the time to go to that individual, so I went team. Then all of a sudden, my daughter gets sick. I had to reprioritize again. And instead of going team, I didn't compete because my focus was too driven in a certain area. Mm-hmm. So the AMRAP mentality is a great way to balance things, because when you're in the middle of it, you're only focused on that, like an AMRAP. You know, if you're working out and you're doing max push-ups or max sit-ups or max squats in a certain amount of time, that's all you're focused on. And that's the way I try as much as I can to live my life, is be focused and present, move on, focused and present, etc.
A lot of people try that.
Yeah.
I think in their lives, at least the people that I surround myself with, but there's also a lot of distractions.
Totally.
How do you put up the Heisman, the metaphorical Heisman, to avoid those distractions, to be able to do your AMRAP?
I mean, you know, you could talk about distractions in multiple different ways. I mean, a lot of people and young men, for example, get distracted by women. I've never been distracted by women because I got with one girl when I was 14. I haven't strayed since, right? So that's not a distraction I need to worry about, because for me, that's just outside the scope. Yeah. You know, distractions come in many different ways, right? And I think that the key is to prioritize what's important to you and then stick to the path. So when you look at your core values of your business, it's easy to get distracted in business, right? So an example is like, you know, if your core value is service-based fitness, whatever it is, and all of a sudden a new opportunity pops up over here and you go for it, you get distracted in so many different ways, you can no longer produce your focus. And so that's why the reevaluation needs to happen in that cycle, is saying, okay, what are three things I really want to focus on? So you take these three things. For me, it's, you know, my family, my business, and then my fitness. So those are my three things. For other people, maybe it's my family, my business, and golf, whatever, right? Whatever. You establish your three big macro. Those are like okay, the big ones. And then you break it down from there into smaller micro stuff. So like if you look at your business, for example, if it doesn't align with your core values and your mission, your vision, then it's a distraction.
Well, that's the first step, to find that core value and the mission, the vision.
Of course. And then same thing with family, right? If it's not benefiting the family, it's not benefiting the kids, it's a distraction, just leave it alone, right? Same thing goes with fitness, right? When you're in fitnessing, you don't need a fitness for 6 hours a day. You need to go in, you need to stay active, you need to make sure you're healthy, you need to exercise 1 hour a day hard, and then move on. And that's, I think, the key, is not to get distracted by these carrots that say, oh, you need to train for 5 hours a day, but it's like, well, you got to ask yourself, yeah, if you want to go to CrossFit Games, you probably do. Mm-hmm. But if you don't care about going to CrossFit Games, you just want to be healthy, an hour a day is probably going to do it for you, and eating well.
Okay. Do you think you're ever going to compete again?
Probably not, no.
Okay.
Not at this point in my life. I mean, business has grown. I mean, I'm going to compete. I'm going to compete a lot, mm-hmm, but I'm not going to compete at the CrossFit Games. I'm going to compete in the sport of business. Mm-hmm. You know, Mark Cuban has a great quote, you know, I love to compete the sport of business. And I think that's a really cool way for me to look at it, is I'm very competitive. So the sport of business for me is the hardest sport ever, because you never know who your competitor is going to be. Yeah. You don't know when they're going to come at you, and it's going on 24/7, 365. And so for me, I'm competing in business, and then, you know, I might compete in like local CrossFit stuff or some jiu-jitsu stuff, yeah, but that's about it.
No, because I just saw you, again, another post. You just, I think 17.1 just came out. You did a sub 13.
Yeah.
And it was like 90th percentile or whatnot. So, yeah. I mean, you're obviously still in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I'm still in good shape, but, you know, that's the thing, man. It's like, you know, I'm not where I was once, but I'm still okay.
Okay.
I'm still good enough that I had a lady come over to the house to do some life insurance stuff, and she was like, "You're in good shape." I was like, "I appreciate that."
How old are you?
I'm 31.
Okay. Very cool.
31. So I got into CrossFit when I was what? 20, 21? All right. 21.
So for most sports, that's a pretty long career.
Yeah. I mean, 8 years at a high level.
And you're beating yourself up for 8 years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you know, you figure for 7 of those 8 years, I was competing year round. So you figure it was the Open Regionals Games, right? Then I would go Team USA would happen after that. And then oftentimes it'd be like a CrossFit Tour was also going on. So I would compete in like, you know, all these competitions year round. And that's what was draining on, specifically on my wife, on my family.
Okay. Last question before I take a quick break. You mentioned business. So thank you for the segues. You're just helping me move through the interview right along.
Yeah.
Laying it up for me. When during your CrossFit journey, you mentioned you opened a box and you knew you'd be in it for a long time. When did you start seriously thinking about that this could be a more of a business than just fitness?
You mean when I first started the company, you mean?
No, before that. When, even how far along were you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, no. I mean, right when I started. I mean,
okay.
You know, so I was graduating from college in 2008 and I had to make a tough decision. I had to ask myself, hey, you know, do I want to go conventional route or do I want to go the non-conventional route? And through multiple different things, it lined up that I wanted to go the non-conventional route, which was to open up a gym.
Okay.
And I opened up in a crappy warehouse in the middle of nowhere. And just from that day, I knew that I had to put in the hard work and dedicate myself to do what I love for a living. And I didn't open it as a hobby. I opened it as a business.
Okay.
And because I knew that unless I went into it all in, I would never be able to create a sustainable living for myself, right? This isn't a hobby to me. It's not a game. It's a passion of mine. And I love it. But don't get it wrong. It's still a business. I needed to collect money. I needed to make money. Otherwise, I couldn't pay my bills.
Okay. Awesome. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with Jason. Hey, everyone. Just a short break for a few quick PSAs. A, sign up for our newsletter. Why do you want to do that? A, you get a quick early heads up on our interviews and blog posts. But more importantly, you can score some free, awesome gear from our partners, Wild Nation and Rogue Fitness. B, make sure to leave us feedback, either on iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube, wherever you're watching or listening. We can't improve if you don't give us feedback. C, if you can't wait till the next episode on Monday and you need that daily fix of Uncharted Performance, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Uncharted Performance and on Twitter at Reach Uncharted. And last but not least, if you want to score some free swag from Uncharted Performance, like this awesome tee that I'm wearing right now, if you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher, you probably can't see it, but it's Lift Today Like It Was Your Last, Marcus Aurelius, famous quote. Head over to our Patreon community and check us out there as well. Thank you guys for checking out this episode and enjoy the second half. See ya. All right, we are back with Jason Kalipa, hanging by the pool.
Yeah.
Just did some laps.
Yeah, that's right.
Dried off. Dried off in the sun. We started talking about business in the first half, so we're going to pick up where we right where we left off.
Okay.
How do you develop, how does one develop, or how did you develop the acumen to run your own business, to start running multiple businesses?
Well, I mean, I think you need mentors. I think you need to identify people who have done what you want to do and just pick their brain. You know, a lot of people don't realize that starting a business isn't a game. It's not a joke. There's a lot at stake. And I think, you know, you really need to identify three key things. It's like, do you understand why you're doing it? Mm-hmm. Right? Can't just be because you and I like to do, you know, curls together.
Yeah.
That's just not a strong enough why. It's like people wanting to go to the CrossFit Games, like they have to have a very strong why, because the pain they're going to have to go through, the stuff they're going to go through is so strong that they need to have that strong internal why to revert back to. So you got to have that. But the second thing that I always tell people is you got to have a competitive advantage. And a competitive advantage, I think, comes from having people who have laid the foundation ahead of you teach you. And that could be going to a gym and having the owner, like kind of shadow the owner for 6 months, a year. And that's what I did, right? So throughout high school, throughout college, I worked at a conventional gym. And I picked the brain of every person I could. I would meet the owner of the gym on the elliptical an hour a night, 3 days a week for years. And I would just listen to him, talk about business, right? Just listen. What is he intrigued on? What is he engaged? What does he think about when he gets to new spaces? What does he do this? And I didn't realize it at the time, what I was doing. I was just trying to meet with him to, you know, get in a little bit of fitness and kind of understand better. But what I was really doing was trying to set myself up for success that when or if I ever wanted to open up a business, I at least had the tools in place for the business side from him, which I think is a critical piece. So I think in business, it's really important to find people who have established certain things from you that you want to do. Mm-hmm. Pick and choose what you like from them. Move on to somebody else, pick and choose, but then take these things and understand that you need to be humble enough to take advice from other people who have done what you want to do.
How have you evolved as a business owner since you first opened up your first box?
You know, we've evolved a lot. I mean, when we first opened the gym, you know, it's like you do everything.
Yeah.
You're the coach, you're the janitor, you're the financial whatever. Uh-huh. I mean, there was no one else working there. Yeah. It was just me. And, you know, that's cool, but it's also difficult, right? Because you're spending your time on things that don't really lead to a return for the business as much. Like, for example, if I'm cleaning the gym, at the time I didn't have any money. But now that's not a good use of my time because I could be doing other things and someone else could be cleaning the gym. As an example, right?
Yeah.
And so I think as you grow and as a business grows, the key is to find good people, delegate, and understand where your time is best spent. Like for me, I'm really good at coaching and developing a community and you know, going out and creating new business. So I should spend my time creating new business and let other people service it. That's what we do now.
Okay.
But back then I was doing everything. And so over the years, I think you have to evolve. And, you know, one of the challenges is, you know, we have a lot of staff that have been with us for 7, 8, 9 years. Mm-hmm. And the relationship I had with them 7, 8, 9 years ago is a lot different than the relationship I have with them today. And it's challenging at times because we used to be this, you know, we used to go into the gym every day. I would see them on a consistent basis. We'd have good conversation, blah, blah. But then over the years, as I got more busy and started opening up more gyms, I didn't have that same personal connection on a day-to-day basis. So then when I go back into the business and try and talk to them, I try and talk to them like it was 2009. But to them, we don't have the same relationship. And so that's something I've had to learn the hard way.
Okay.
Is that when you don't have as much connection with people and you have expanded your business and you're the owner, sometimes the words you say, they call it like seagull managing. Basically, you come in, you shit on somebody, and then you fly away,
yeah.
Right? Because I don't have that personal connection. I need to get better at that. And so that's what we've been working on lately.
Okay. And that's that's one of the questions I have. How do you become an effective leader? Because you have grown so much. You do own a very large business. It's global. You're doing multiple seminars. You're doing various things. How do you stay true, I guess, to your original mission?
I mean, the original mission, you know, I get asked that a lot. And I think, you know, at first, back in the day with CrossFit, when I first opened up a second location or a third location, people would sometimes at times be like, oh, you're selling out. It's like, well, who's really selling out? My original intention was to provide for my family and as many families as possible.
Yeah.
Right? Changing people's life through fitness. So have we really steered away from that? Or are we just empowering more people to actually do what they love for a living and as a byproduct, help more people? You know, we have 5,000, 6,000 active members now, right? If we only had one gym, we would never be able to service that amount of people. And so I think what's been challenging from a management perspective is just understanding that as a business grows, your relationships with each employee are just not going to be the same as they used to be. Mm-hmm. And I wanted them to be the same. I wanted to be able to go in there and just bro out with people and do whatever. But that's not the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there needs to be more management structure, I think, as you grow a business. You need to have, you know, I manage X people. They manage Y people. Those people manage these people. And the reason why it's important is that the manager has a really good relationship with the people they manage. So when they talk, it talks in a more constructive manner.
Okay.
Then when you just come out of nowhere and say something, oftentimes it's not well received.
When did you decide to open a second and then multiple locations? What was your green light?
Once we started really, you know, so I signed a 6-month lease when we first opened up the gym. Mm-hmm. And I told myself I was going to be so successful, we're going to outgrow that space, which we did.
Okay.
From there, we expanded a new location, right?
So you set a pretty high bar for yourself from the get-go.
I mean, signed a 6-month lease. It was either I didn't have any money. So it's either I'm going to be bankrupt, right? Yeah. Or I'm going to grow out of this space. And so I think by the time we moved out of that space, I think we had like 100 members in 1,000 square feet. It was crazy. I mean, it was just packed. But I was also there all day long. So people would kind of like just drop in and I would work out with them half the time. Because a lot of times these classes weren't very crowded. Like we would have people come in at 5 a.m., 7 a.m., 7:20, whatever. And I would just kind of figure it out. Because we didn't really have like a class schedule at the time. Because I mean, at least in the beginning, like first couple months. As the months went on, of course, we created a class schedule. But I just said, hey, you want to come in at 6? Come in at 6. You want to come in at 5? Come in at 5. I don't care. Whenever you come in, just come in the doors. And from then, you know, I really thought about, you know, what's the goal? And one of the reasons why we opened up a second location is because we had a key staff member who I wanted to give an opportunity to, right? Okay. And so I was saying, okay, this guy's awesome. how do I create an opportunity for him within our organization so he doesn't go out and do it on his own? And that was the reason why we expanded originally.
Gotcha. Now you have, I think, over 30, right? Across the globe?
24.
24. Okay. Yeah. So close to 30.
Yeah, close to 30. I mean, some of those are a little skewed though, because some of our corporate sites are a little bit more like, so we have commercial, like open to the public, mm-hmm. and then we have corporate. Mm-hmm. A lot of those, you know, it's about, a lot of those are corporate, like
location. Okay, gotcha. How do you keep the message the same? Because I'm assuming that you want the message to be the same and across these locations that you have at your original flagship.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good question. How do you keep the quality the same? And I think that's a great, great question. So Michael Mina is a good friend of mine. And he has about 30, 40 restaurants nationwide. And I always ask him the same question. You know, how do you keep the restaurant food quality, the service? How do you keep it all the same? And really, it's hiring really good people, right? And understanding your core competency. So for us, our core competency, what makes us different is our coaching.
Okay.
So our facilities, sure, they have to be clean, they have to have bathrooms, whatever, right? Whatever. But if our core competency, our coaching is not on point and it's not communicated well across the ecosystem, we're going to have big problems. And so that's what we spend a lot of our money on. We spend a lot of money on coaching development. We have an online platform we use for our international locations in Asia. But it's mainly just doing that type of thing, is identifying our coach, the way we want to coach movement, the way we want to do certain things, and then expressing it through the organization, through different layers. That's what we do.
Are you looking to expand more?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
100%.
Has a business plan or a business idea never worked out? Or didn't work out as well as you thought it would?
Yeah. I mean, we opened up a new location about 6 months ago, and it hasn't gone as well as we wanted. It's not like a terrible investment. Mm-hmm. But I think we went a little bit too... We learned a little bit that, you know, our core is in the roots of more of a rugged, we try to go a little bit too mainstream. And I think we needed to revert back and still have a rig in, still make it more CrossFit-ish. And I think we tried to trend a little bit too towards Orange Theory in one of the gyms we opened. So those are things that we're learning, but it's not a bad investment. They're just learning investments. Mm-hmm. And you pivot quick and you pivot often, right? I mean, we pivot all the time. We're in the hospitality. We do hotel fitness centers. We do corporate wellness. We do different things because unless we're doing pivoting, but always recognizing our core competency is coaching, we could bring that in anywhere. We could bring service-based fitness anywhere. And as long as we stay true to that, I think we're going to do great things.
Besides coaching, what are some other differentiators that have helped you be so successful?
I think really what it is it's the fact that we constantly are evaluating what opportunities we have, mm-hmm. right? What are our threats and what's going on? And, you know, we have good people in place. That's our competitive advantage. We have really good people. We have great coaching. And we have, I'm always at the active pursuit of new business, right? So I'm pitching companies on the weekly. I'm trying to establish new business opportunities all the time. And I think we have a good funnel now to service them. So that's why I think we win.
Why continue keep pitching? Why continue to grow?
Well, that's a decision. I mean, that's the sport of business, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I talked to my wife in early 2017 this year, and I said to her, I was like, look, babe, we have two options. Option A, we can keep doing exactly what we're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, we live a good lifestyle, all is well, right? Or B, we could go out and reach our potential. And I know we could do so much more. I know we could change this fitness industry. I know we could do certain things. Where's your head at? She's like, well, sounds to me like you've already made up your mind. Like,
you're just telling me.
Yeah. Like, why would you not want to reach your potential? Uh-huh. Why would you? And that's what I think really drives me every day is that I know that there's so much more we could do. I know there's a fitness industry from a service base, specifically in the corporate wellness, that needs to be revolutionized, you know? And we need to bring service into fitness regardless of what you're doing, whether you're bodybuilding, whether you're powerlifting, whatever it is. There should be service oriented from that. That's what we're about, right? So if you go into a hotel gym, I want you to go to a hotel gym and have someone ask you, hey, can I help you with your workout today? Instead of just being like, oh, here's a water bottle and towel.
Yeah.
And that's why I think I know there's a lot more to do, and that's why I'm motivated to do it, okay. Right? It's like knowing that you could, I don't know. It's like knowing there's an opportunity somewhere and not trying to achieve it all the way. You're just kind of going halfway.
Why go beyond NC Fit then? Because you're also doing Box to a Business and, you know, the Imam of the Day and other things.
The Imam of the Day thing is really just, that right there is could be looked at as a distraction, honestly.
Okay.
And it's a hobby. And some people may say it's a distraction. I don't spend very much time on it because it is kind of a distraction, but it's fun. I enjoy it. But that's definitely a hobby. That's not a moneymaker for me. Okay. I don't really care. Box to Business, same exact thing. JP and I have never made 1 cent ever off Box to Business. Mm-hmm. And we could have made a lot of money, but we want to help affiliate owners. And we believe truthfully that when the tide rises, all the boats go up. We really believe that. And if you start seeing CrossFit gyms left and right go out of business, it's not good for our industry. So we want to go out there. We want to help. And I feel like we have an obligation to, because, you know, we've learned the hard way. You know, I've been doing this for 10 years now. I've learned the hard way on what works and what doesn't. If I could have some time for someone to come and I just give them a little bit of knowledge and transforms their business, dude, you know what, man? That's a good day. And we're raising money for kids with pediatric cancer too. I mean, okay, you know, we've donated, I don't know, maybe 100 grand so far from Box to Business to helping kids fighting cancer. And that's really cool. That's, you awesome, know, so man, that's why we do it. The Box to Business could also be looked at as a distraction. It could be. But my answer to them is, we're feeding the ecosystem that'll help our business. We're giving back to affiliate owners, but most importantly, we're supporting kids with pediatric cancer. And that, to me, is never going to be a distraction. That's a priority in my life.
Awesome. If you don't mind, I guess educating some listeners, our listeners, our viewers, of maybe one or two things to not do as a box owner.
I mean, I would say don't open up a gym unless you know it's going to be as a business, right? It's not a hobby. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going in with five different partners, each putting in $5,000, it's a terrible idea. And I've seen it time and time again. So when you open it like a business. One of the problems with CrossFit gyms is the barrier to entry is very low. You and I right now go sign up for an affiliate, go sign a lease, you know, put $10,000 worth of gear in the gym and say we own a business. But what we don't realize is all the risk and liability associated with that, right? And is the zoning appropriate on the building? There's so many things. So I think step number one is barrier to entry is low, learning curve is high. I would try and get as much knowledge as you can before you get into it and understand that when you do open it, it's a business and it's not a game. Gotcha. That would be one thing. And secondly, I would just say, hey, look, just because you open up a gym doesn't mean people are just going to flock to your business. You need to be actively thinking about what is my marketing concepts? How am I going to get people to come in the door? And what is my competitive advantage that I win? Because now there's CrossFit gyms all over the place. Mm-hmm. How do you differentiate yourself? And that could be from your brand. That could be from your coaching. That could be whatever it is. But you need to be able to have a differentiator so you can guarantee yourself at least a better position to win.
You've done a ton of podcasts. You've done a ton of interviews. What's the one thing nobody's asked you? Something that maybe you were hoping they would ask, but nobody has asked you. You just want to get off your chest.
I don't know, man. I've been asked a lot of questions about a lot of things. My life is very open book. I mean, I don't know. That's interesting. Give me a second to think about that.
You got it.
What would I like to be asked, huh?
Let me rephrase it then. Something that you haven't had an opportunity to express. If you haven't. If you already have, it's all good. Talk about your pool.
You know my pool. My pizza oven.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately, you know, what I'd like to share with anybody listening, that could be one person, 10 people, 1,000 people, is that I think we need to live our life. You know, you check in at night with yourself and you say, hey, did I do a good job today as a family man, a businessman, and all my fitness, right? You check in with yourself. Hey, how did I do today? And one of the things I like to check in with myself on is like, dude, am I being a dick? You know, I think people need to realize that like life is good and they need to take a step back and reflect that they should be grateful for their health. They should be grateful for their family and their friends. And if they look at it with a perspective of glasses instead of sunglasses, right? They look at it in the lens of brightness instead of darkness. I think they'll realize their life probably isn't as bad as they think it is. And I think oftentimes, you know, you go to Starbucks or something, you just see people so pissed off. Yeah. It's like, dude, chill out. You know, like you're at Starbucks. You're doing okay. Like, you know, have you seen a kid in the ICU before? Have you seen what happens there? Yeah. Have you seen the families that are broken, just broken as deep as you can? You know, take a step back for a second and enjoy and have a positive perspective. Everybody goes through challenging times. Everybody does. And everybody will. But I think it's the way you react to it. And so my recommendation would be when you wake up in the morning, just reflect on how you want to take on that day. And I think the best way to take it on is in a positive light instead of a negative light. Because you can look at anything. We could be standing here right now in sunny, beautiful California. But you know what we could be saying? You have a t-shirt on. It's 55 degrees. You might be a little bit, like, you could say, yeah, it's a little bit cold. Or you could say, you know what, man? This is a beautiful day, yeah. Right? But you have a choice to make. right? How you want to perceive that. And I think oftentimes people can easily roll into the negative. For some reason, I don't know what it is. You know, it's like watching the news. They always revert to this darkness when they should be shining towards the brightness.
Awesome. No, I appreciate it. Thank you. Great advice. What's next for you, man?
The next step is maintain my fitness, have fun with it. You know, make sure we cure Ava's leukemia. That's priority number one, period, period, period. You know, make sure I'm doing the best I can with my son and my wife and grow the business. I mean, the business, we are on a mission to transform, service-based fitness. And that's what we want to do.
Awesome. If there's listeners, viewers that are outside of the CrossFit world, where can people find you, follow you?
Mainly Instagram, Jason Klipa. Mm-hmm. I think that's the easiest way. There's Box of Business on there as well, but mainly Instagram, Jason Klipa. That's a good place where you just kind of get an idea of who I am.
Awesome. Jason, thank you very much for hosting us, letting us into your backyard on this beautiful day.
No problem, man. Good to have you.
It's an awesome time. I'm very humbled to be standing right next to you and spend the last hour with you. So thank you again, man. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Take care, guys. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for checking out the video. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel and also check out our Patreon community by following the links right below me. Also, make sure to check out the related videos to my left, your right. You'll probably dig those as well. Thank you again and see you next time on Uncharted Performance. Take care.